Tensor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Ostal by Michael Chatfield, narrated by Joel Richards. Prologue. Mining City 21. Ostal Actual. Ostal System. 10:32:42. It was a holographic meeting. People sat around a desk, and there were three chairs where there had been five just 25 years ago. All the representatives were cloaked in shadow, their features and voices obscured. "The representative from Ostal has the floor," a commanding voice said. Luke knew the representative from House Appel. He had been the one to teach him about harmony. How to get people to do what he wanted with a small incentive and the right leverage.
"From our communications with Mintran, it looks like the Harmony forces there were not able to secure their positions before the troopers appeared," Luke said, his voice coming out deeper and slower.
"We knew that the EMF had many carriers in limbo, so it is not a shock that they had carriers close to at least one of our systems," Fernix representative said, sounding monotone and tinny.
"It will mean that we do not have the materials we need for more weapons and armor," Luke explained.
Ostal supplied the majority of materials to the other systems, but Mintran had fuel and specific metallic materials for building, items that would take time to get to Mintran from Ostal.
"It looks that Nevad has caught on to Fernix and House Appel. He is rerouting shipping away from our systems in a bid to recreate Strike Station," he says. "I think he just wants to keep the materials away from us," House Appel said.
"It might make sense to let our presence be known soon," Fernix mused.
Luke and House Appel waited for Fernix to continue.
"We already control all that we would need. We do not need to convince anyone to join our cause. We can also get the propaganda machine going and turn Ostal into a show of what the company forces will do when we try to work for equality. We don't start with enforcers, we start with chosen, and start making militaries. They will need time to get better and to prepare to fight troopers. If Nevad thinks that we are already Harmony, then there is no issue," Fernix said.
There was silence. Luke thought it was a good argument, but Harmony had started in House Appel, and House Appel's representative was the leader of their movement.
"I think you might be correct, Fernix. With proper militaries that look to protect the people instead of exercise their power in any way possible, our systems will support us more fully," House Appel said.
Luke didn't comment. Masul and Ostal were proving grounds for tech to be used against the EMF. He cared little for the systems. They weren't his own. He would make sure his forces bled the EMF as much as possible. That was his role, to weaken the EMF before House Appel and Fernix.
"So shall we move ahead with our plan?" Fernix asked.
House Appel replied,
"Yes, we shall. Send word out to our people to put our plans into motion. Ostal, have the EMF appeared yet?"
"Not yet, though I have freighters out for them," Luke said.
"Be careful. These ones are smarter than I thought. Using an EMP to blind our sensors and communications, no other EMF carrier has done that before. Destroying the Earth's military force carrier reclaimer is your highest priority," House Appel said, and even with the voice modification, there was no denying that the words were in order.
"I will see to it. Measures have been taken to make sure that we are not blinded by another EMP strike," Luke said.
"Good. We have lost valuable information being unable to see the performance of new weaponry," Fernix said.
Luke had had more than one conversation with the other Harmony system heads about how they were building weapons that they didn't know were still effective or not.
"I think that is all we have to discuss. See to your tasks." House Appel disappeared from view.
Fernix similarly dissolved. Luke let out an amused snort. House Appel never said, for the sake of harmony, around the other system leaders. It was a saying for the useless peons that did their bidding. Being a CEO for nearly 400 years and getting sidelined by other systems, Luke and his fellow Harmony leaders had conspired to use the lower ranks' anger to collect the power and control of other systems. When they were done, they would control Earth. No longer would they be sitting in backwater partnership worlds. They would be the CEOs of Earth. Luke stood and left the conference room, a hungry look on his face, as he pictured Navad Selvra begging for his life at Luke's feet. Chapter 1 Tower, Earth, Sol System, 10-32-42. Navad looked at the reports from House Appel and Fernix. He was a simple-looking man, with black hair, light-colored skin, and a flair for expensive suits. He did not look like Earth and her colony's power broker. He was the go-between for companies, and he ruled the EMF and Intelligence Ministry. Information was his trade, and money was his scorecard. Company takeovers, and the latest scandal he could use to leverage shares from a prominent CEO, were far from his mind. His office was large. It held an obsidian black desk, a liquor cabinet, opulent chairs with couches beyond them, and wall-length view screens that showed Mega City. Everything was designed to display both his power and personal wealth. Dahlia and Wallace sat in the chairs in front of the obsidian desk, their faces hard as Navad held his chin and read reports on his surface. Harmony had been hit almost overnight. They had removed the CEOs from their systems and called for democracy. It was a sham, like Earth's own presidential election. The voice pieces of Harmony were elected. There were a number of them, and they even made it look like a fight between them all. Navad wondered if Harmony might have had an actual election. With all of the options being Harmony's anyway, whichever one got elected, they would spout Harmony's words. They'd brought back religion, they'd raised the wages, and then asked for people to join their military. Navad felt his face tighten as he put the surface down. There was a light buzzing in the air, telling Navad and his company that no one would ever hear their conversation.
"It seems that they have finally shown their hands," Navad said,
looking from Dahlia to Wallace. Any other person might have fidgeted or been scared. These two simply sighed and nodded. Wallace pulled out a cigarette as Navad sat back in his chair. He offered them to Navad and Dahlia, and they both took one. Navad allowed the practice to center his mind as he thought.
"What are our recruiting numbers looking like?" Navad asked. "We have 3,000 potentials going through every day," Dahlia said. "Move all limbo carriers, except the four surrounding Earth. How is that contract for carriers coming along?" Navad asked.
Wallace exhaled smoke. "Now we have the yard working for us. We should have 12 carriers produced in a year."
"What about the new survey ships?" Navad asked Wallace.
"The first is already in transit to Mosul to track down the Harmony's FTL communications. The second and third are moving through the uninhabited systems."
"What can we expect at the end of this?" Navad looked at the other two. "Mosul is still rebuilding. Mintran is firmly on our side. Ostal is in opposition. The Chosen are still nothing but a large gang that intimidate people. While that works for individuals, for populations it makes them restless and angry. The civilians want them gone, but they've been around for so long that they're used to them. Humans get used to a new situation quickly. They won't help us, but they won't go against us. It will take new colonists and new CEOs to get the planet running."
Dahlia smoked on her cigarette, bracing herself for the worst parts. "Fernix and House Appel are doing something similar to Sacramon. They're giving power to the people, and they're raising a military with a stake in their future.
it looks like they want to create a professional military like the EMF. One that has tactics, weapons, and gear that are on level with our troopers, if not above.
Others would have shied from this admission, but she knew how Navad needed the information, and withholding it from him would only make him angrier when he found out. And he would find out.
Navad smoked and looked to his view screens, staring down on Mega City. If we win, what will happen to the systems?
Dahlia hid her wince at his choice in words.
There will be groups that will work for the new CEOs, but it will require a complete colonial reseeding to get the systems into production, she said.
Have the partnerships for Housapel and Fernix been approached yet? Navad asked.
Through unofficial channels. They want to know how much this will cost them. They understand it will be high, Dahlia replied.
They won't have any profits until the new colonists and CEOs arrive. We should have them picked and transported to the systems, waiting and reseeding the systems as soon as the troopers clear them. Still, it will take at least 30 years of profits to pay off our fees, so we will have to run them on credit.
To Navad, the business side of things was simplistic relative to everything else.
What about the EMF?
Losses are expected to be high. We don't know all of the tech Harmony is building, but Vernix builds freighters, and was where a number of carriers were made. They know the ships, their armor and armaments. Estimates put us at losing half to three-quarters of our forces. We simply don't know.
Dahlia wasn't optimistic.
There's something more than numbers we have to think on. What will the troopers be like after surviving the war against Harmony?
I guess it is a war now. So what do you think, Wallace?
Navad asked, throwing his cigarette into a disposal chute.
We're going to have heroes, and that's something I think that we should embellish. We want people to get behind us and support our war. We want more people watching the feeds. We need heroes. Hell, that group that infiltrated Masul, they're already heroes. We need real leaders, none of the politicking CEOs in EMF uniforms. We're going to have to remove most of that crust and let trooper leaders, real leaders, step into that space.
Wallace paused.
But we have to remember that these leaders will have their people's loyalty, so we have to make sure that we always have a way to control the situation. Some kind of charges, medical release, retirement, and so on. We're going to have to run a balance. There will be hundreds of thousands of troopers working together. We need to make them as effective as possible as they face down millions. We also need to make sure they don't turn that confidence against us.
So, we balance the heroes with our strategies to remove them from the limelight. But we also have to deal with the disparity of forces, and the fact not many will be of use to us, Navad said.
Essentially, Wallace agreed.
You said that they will be facing millions. On Ostal, there were 12 million people. Housapel has 50 million, and Fernix has 27. How do we know that any troopers will survive? Navad asked.
Look at EMFC Reclaimer. The carrier has gone through two bad systems. Statistically, those that survived Sacramon survived Masul. Their overall survival rate compared to EMFC Fearless was higher, other than in units primarily staffed by Reclaimer troopers that had been transferred, Wallace said.
It's the reason that they are going to be reinforced instead of reinforcing other units, Dahlia supplied, remembering the conversations they'd had on the subject. So, if the troopers survive their first engagements, then they should survive the later ones, Navad asked.
It will get rid of the worst troopers, only increasing the effectiveness of the units left behind. Accidents happen and they will die, but they will have a greater effect, Wallace said.
They had all needed to learn about the EMF and their troopers in order to combat the threat that Harmony posed to their system. Wallace had studied unit tactics as Dahlia dealt with the numerical side of the situation.
Navad trusted Wallace's judgment.
Status of our carriers headed to Ostal? He asked, and Dahlia glanced to her surface.
They are a year and a half away from the system. 5 carriers are waiting.
The others? Navad asked.
We need to make the decision to have them go to Ostal or hit Furnix and Hausapel, she said.
Have forces move to Hausapel and hide outside the system. We have limited intel coming from the ground, so having scans on the system will be of utmost importance. If we see a weakness, we'll hit them, and I want forces stopping any traffic leaving or entering the system. However, I want the full force of our EMF focused on taking Furnix. We cannot let them get carriers and start attacking colonies, Navad said, pressing his finger on the table to punctuate his point. He sat back in his chair as he continued.
I want our carriers intercepting freighters to Furnix and sending them to Masul. Once we control Ostal, I want to shift all of our forces, except those around Hausapel, to hit Furnix and then Hausapel. We're going to need freighters and carriers to revive the economy. We don't need household goods and electronics.
Intercept all materials moving between the systems, and have forces gathering intel as we move forces to hit them en masse, Wallace summarized.
Exactly, Navad said. We've also shut down the connection in the banking system. The leaders will probably figure another system out, but it puts their funds now at our disposal to use against them, Dahlia said, pushing something up on her surface, and it appeared on the obsidian desk. Navad looked over the numbers, 3 systems worth of wealth at his fingertips.
The thrill he usually felt, looking over the sheet, was dulled by the reality that he would much rather have the systems back to the way they were, instead of having all of that wealth at his disposal.
Chapter 2 EMFC Reclaimer, moving from Masul System to Ostal, 1-3266. Mark woke up from cryo for the 6th time in his life, and, unlike the last time, he wasn't suffering from the effects of being ripped out of cryo by drugs. He grabbed the bars of his pod and pulled himself out. His platoon were all stretching, working their tongues and spitting on the floor to try and get rid of the cryo aftertaste. After Masul, there weren't even enough of them to make up a half platoon. Not even Dashtand, the most vocal person in the platoon, tried to make a joke. For the universe, 23 years had passed since the EMF had cleared any resistance from Masul's system. The troopers that had been there got 2 weeks' leave to get over their loss, pull themselves together, and walk into their cryopods. No time passed in their cryopods, so they woke with the losses of their friends still fresh. Tyler caught Mark's eye, and even he looked downcast as he nodded. No one yelled to get people moving, like they had on Mark's first deployment. There weren't any new recruits, only veterans with hard eyes and lined features. Mark turned his implants on, his view showing the same heads-up display his helmet would. Everyone was healthy, and the BattleNet confirmed that there were no enemy locations in the area of Reclaimer. Mark turned to the net where information and orders were passed through, and where there was a chat room for all troopers. The post he was looking for was at the very top. Orders. Check troopers' status. Prepare for reinforcements. Commence training. Proceed to Ostal system. Mark let out a sigh as they exited the spine in a press of bodies. The spine held all of the enlisted troopers in a central area, running the length of the ship.
Sup? Jerome asked, sounding tired and bored.
No indication of how much time we've got to train or how long it will take to get to Ostal, Mark said. Jerome was a shorter, tanned man, but training and augments had turned him into a hefty slab of corded muscle. He could easily carry his armor, ammo, and 2 other troopers with the same loadout. Mark and Tyler had accepted him into their brotherhood. They'd fought together on Sacramon, and that friendship had only grown with time.
Awesome, Jerome said, his eyes smoldering as he ground his teeth in annoyance.
Second Lieutenant Haas turned as they were walking,
so he could include the 18-trooper platoon in his announcement.
Captain Ortiz wants to see us.
Haas was a solid man, heavy-set like everyone else, with sandy blonde hair and eyes that had been dulled by loss, anger, and fatigue. The platoon didn't ask questions, but straightened as they followed. People talked here and there, but there was little to talk about. They were only ever woken up to fight someone. They all knew that the group calling themselves Harmony had been using Masul as a testing ground, and it had taken 2 Earth Military Force carriers to destroy Harmony and Masul. Some 80,000 troopers had died to secure the system.
If that was just their testing ground, Ostal's going to be hell, Mark thought as the lift stopped.
Their platoon had lost 32 people in Masul. Second Lieutenant Haas sat at the front of the conference room, and Warrant Zukic sat next to him. Their entire platoon was arranged around the conference table, waiting for their orders. Captain Ortiz was a fireplug, short, strong as a tank, always pissed off and just waiting to snap. Yet under all that, he was a good tactician, and he knew when to stow the anger and look at the situation in front of him. He cared about his troopers first and foremost, and people respected the man.
"Smoke them if you got them," he said, pulling out a cigarette and lighting it.
Others did the same, if for no other reason than to remove the taste in their mouths. Mark chewed on gum and pulled out a pack of chewing tobacco. Ortiz sank into a chair, and Mark had his chew encased in gum when Ortiz started talking.
"Ostal is an open uprising. Things a shit show."
His eyes unfocused before a hologram appeared in the center of the table, showing the Ostal system. There was a sun, 5 planets, and a thick Oort cloud. The first 2 planets from the sun were uninhabitable. The 3rd planet was covered in organic materials, it was called, and the 5th was an iron-based planet, high in rare metals, called Ostal Actual. Refining facilities lay across the planet, and in-orbit processing stations took the materials from Ostal 3, Ostal Actual, and the Oort cloud, and then turned them into whatever their clients needed. The whole system had been turned into one massive material supplier.
"Been doing it in the open for 21 years. They didn't spread like they did in Masul. They were already in every area across the system. The entire fucking thing is hostile." He took a drag of his cigarette. "There are 12 million people in all of Ostal. The cryo facilities were the first things to be destroyed. We're getting some information, but it's slim. They control all of the information here. We know that they have powered armor, and they can use it to bully people. But I don't know if they're any good with it in a fight."
Mark pulled an empty water pouch from his leg and spat into it.
"Here's why he called us up here," Mark thought.
The whole room was focused on Ortiz.
"Your platoon is the only group of troopers that have used powered armor, ever. We will be linking up with 5 other carriers, not including Fearless and Reclaimer. Hire wants people to be trained to take down powered armor. We're supposed to get more in a few years, but it will probably be too late."
"So you want us to train people to take down powered armor?" Haas confirmed.
"Yes. Be prepared to be used for clandestine operations and bring your platoon up to strength. Nerva's cooking up something," Ortiz said, pausing, looking conflicted by what else he had to say. He looked up at the men and women in the room. "You need to understand that these are 5 different carriers. That's 5 new generals and sets of people we need to deal with. Nerva is going to be doing his best to get us the best troopers. Reclaimer and our people have shown that we're good time and time again. We look good. That makes other generals and troopers look bad. So be ready for hostilities."
Ortiz's voice was light, but all of them saw the warning in his eyes. Tyler ran his finger over Alexis' new stripes on her smart clothes. 2 bronze lines over a bronze dot, identical to the insignia on his own arm.
She wandered out of the shower, drying her hair, naked as the day she was born. She was the most beautiful woman Tyler had ever met, and not just for her body, but for her mind and smile, too. "Husband, clothes," she said, toweling herself and holding her hand open. He grabbed her hand and pulled her down. "Will you two please get a room?" Waz, her second-in-command, called. The rest of her section were out and taking in the last of their leave, sleeping, reading, or playing a card game. Alexis hit Tyler's arm. "Way to make me look like a sergeant," she said. She got off of him, putting on the shirt and pulling her pants out from under him. The section didn't even bat an eyelid. They'd fought across Mosul, they'd bled together and seen their friends die. So a bit of nudity might get a few interested looks, but communal showers were nothing to get excited about. It was just a shower. They were handsome guys and beautiful women, and the showers had been used for more than just casual looking. Troopers respected one another like brothers and sisters. They usually saw people outside of their platoon as possible one-night stands and a bit of fun. But few committed to anything serious, and sexual misconduct got you shot. No one wanted to have a would-be rapist on board. Tyler and Alexis had gone down the commitment route, as shown by the tattoos they got on their ring fingers. Rings got in the way of their armored gloves, but tats were fine. She sat on the bed and pulled her boots on her smart clothes, which clung tight to her form. Tyler sat there with his hands behind his head, smiling the entire time. She crawled on top of him and kissed him, and Tyler felt his arms wrapping around her, pulling her body to his own. "Maybe we should go to the library tonight?" he asked, biting her ear. He felt her body tense in pleasure, but she pulled away. "You know we have to do all of the paperwork for the transfers," she said, and her eyes went distant for a moment. 2 hours till they arrive," she said apologetically. "Plenty of time to go right now," Tyler grinned. She tried not to smile, her face betraying her as she bit her lower lip and moved against him. "What do you say, Mrs. Victor?" he asked, his large hands resting on her hips. "That you better hurry the hell up. Have fun, try not to get it on the upholstery. Feel sorry for the bastards that have to clean the library," Waz said, getting laughs from the section and Tyler. "You should try telling Helen that a library is meant to be quiet," Alexis shot back. "Not my fault if she had a good time. Oh, come on, Horley. You and your goddamn ace," Waz complained, as Horley smiled happily at disrupting Waz's attempt to go it alone in euchre. Alexis and Tyler escaped to the hallway, holding hands. "So, what have you heard about the newbies?" Alexis asked. Tyler's smile faltered. "It looks like they're new, so we're getting their troopers that just completed basic. The other generals want to look good, so they're sticking with their veterans." "Why the long face? We'll get them into shape," Alexis said, hitting him with her hip. "These ones didn't go through the basic we went through. They just had to meet the bare minimum. None of them have been shot," Tyler said, seeing Alexis wince. "But we'll change them, though it's not going to be easy." "When are things ever easy?" Can I get back to you on that one?" She laughed, the rich noise making Tyler's grin turn into a full-fledged smile. They shared everything, and she always made Tyler feel better for it. There were no lies. They told each other what they were thinking, and that was why Tyler could never think to be with another person. He loved being with her, and time apart hurt him more than he would have thought possible. When they met, they had been rival gang members, but joining Earth's military forces and becoming troopers together had turned their casual interest in one another into fully fledged love. "I love you," he said, squeezing her hand slightly. She looked to him, her eyes shining. They had only a trace of the veteran in them, the sad part that knew that their relationship could be ended by one stray bullet. "I love you too," she said,
accepting that vulnerability as he had, and brushing it aside.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?